Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, we're going to get into how to make more money online with someone that's done it to the tune of over $1 million. And I think that was in 1 year.
Yeah, 1.5 actually. I almost forgot my name in the introduction there, if y'all are wondering about that slight awkward pause that hopefully nobody else heard. But in speaking of, and that transition makes no sense, so I'm just going to jump right into our first course.
I was wondering what you were going to do there. I was like, how are you going to tie this together?
Yeah. You know, I was looking for a segue there. The brain wasn't going at like a million miles an hour, like the $1 million. So it is what it is. But where it was working is when I designed the debt-free course, our four-week starter kit, which is dropping this financial literacy month. You can get the goods if you're on our email list or join at paybal.co/email. It's going to be at the lowest price we can think of, and it will never be that low again.
And wait till we tell you what it is. Because, I mean, really, we did think of the lowest price possible for what we're going to be delivering here. So super excited to get that out there to the world.
Yes, sir.
So today we're chatting with Michelle Schroeder Gardner, founder of Making Sense of Sense, a popular personal finance blog that she's turned into a money-making machine. And she's done this all while continuing to be honest and helpful to her audience. So we hope you enjoyed this conversation with Michelle, and we'll see you on the back end of the show.
And welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So as we talked a little bit before we got started here, I do want to talk about hashtag the struggle. I think that'll be meaningful for our listeners, but let's start on a happy foot. So let's talk a little bit about your background, upbringing, family life. What did you learn about money in the house?
My family money was a little different than most, or maybe it's pretty similar. My dad was really good with money and my mom was like the exact opposite of him. My dad was all about saving. He lived super frugally, like hardly spent any money on anything. Like he wore the exact same, or he had the exact same wardrobe the whole entire time I knew him. He's since passed away. Like he literally wore the same clothes every single week, every single month. And so it was really funny. And then my mom was on the exact opposite spectrum. Like she was constantly buying clothes, constantly buying items, constantly buying furniture, stuff like that. So they were really, really different. So I saw both the good and the bad sides of money. And it definitely taught me a lot about what I wanted to do with my life and how I didn't want to live paycheck to paycheck and stuff like that. So it definitely was an interesting influence on both sides for me.
If you're comfortable talking about it, it's fine. If you're not, was there money fights? Because it sounds like that's an environment for it. And if so, did you witness it?
Yeah. So they actually divorced and I'm pretty sure it was because of money. I was really young when it happened. But yeah, there were definitely lots of money fights.
And how did, I guess, that shape your perspective about money, good and bad?
It definitely taught me a lot of things. Like, I mean, I was really young when it happened. I was like 10 years old or something. So, I mean, I didn't really get like the full picture, of course, but I learned a lot of, like, you should always be super open with money. And I don't think my parents like ever really had money talks. And I definitely think that's something that more households should have. And that's something me and my husband talk about money all the time. And I definitely think it's helpful.
Did y'all do that from the very beginning or something that you matured? And if, I guess I'm going to ask, how do you take those steps to have those money talks? I know that's difficult for a lot of people.
We've always talked about money. We've been together since we were just teenagers. And pretty much since that time, we've always talked about money, which is really funny because I remember when we were young and people found out that we were open about like money conversations and people thought we were crazy, like telling us like, oh, you guys are making a huge mistake. Like you don't talk about money right now, especially when you're that young. But I definitely think it's super helpful to talk about money, maybe not from the very beginning, but as soon as you can, as soon as you think it's a serious relationship, for sure, I think it would be helpful.
I just want to say that being with someone since the teenagers, that's so rare. So how did y'all, so did y'all meet in like high school and go skating and that was a wrap after that?
We had mutual friends in high school, yeah.
This reminds me of the Wonder Years, but I feel like if I went down that street, this would be a whole episode about that. So unfortunately for the guests who do want to know, I guess you're going to have to follow up, but maybe we'll have a second show about that. That'll definitely take me down a rabbit hole. So we're going to skip forward a few years here. And, you know, I did a little research here. It said you worked in the financial services industry as a financial analyst.
Yeah, I worked as a valuation analyst, to be specific. I did that for about 3 to 4 years before I turned blogging into my full-time career. It was a good job, but I just wasn't super happy doing it.
And so we had another guest on recently who also talked about working in the financial services sector. So what made you choose that? And then was it everything? Well, clearly it wasn't everything that it was cracked up to be because you're no longer doing it. So what made you choose that? And then what was probably the most surprising thing to you about working in that field, if there was anything that you found particularly surprising?
Yeah. So growing up, like in elementary school, middle school, high school, college and stuff like that, I definitely never thought I would be a business owner. It never once crossed my mind. I legit just thought I would work for like a big corporation and I would just be like the CEO or something. Like I had really weird dreams. Like as a kid, everyone wanted to be like an astronaut or a teacher or a parent or something. I just wanted to work for a corporation and be a CEO. So, I mean, I had no dreams of owning my own business. I just wanted to work for a big company. And I just went to school for business because I thought that was a good major to learn in. And eventually I found my first job as a financial analyst and it was okay. It had nothing to do with like personal finance. It was all business and like old money finance. So it was just really draining. It was really stressful and it was also really tiring working for like five-year-olds who had like millions and millions of dollars. So it was just like a little depressing as well, just because I was living paycheck to paycheck, helping people manage their like billion-dollar portfolios. And it was just, it just wasn't for me.
Mm. And so there are a lot of folks who are listening to this show who are very much still in corporate America. And given the time you spent there, would there be any advice for anyone who's in a corporate gig and they're thinking about the next step of their career or how to go forward?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think like all corporate jobs are bad. I definitely think that everyone is different and everyone has their own passions. So for some people, a corporate job can be great. But for me, once I started blogging and I realized like there was, I could be a business owner and stuff like that, I realized that that was definitely my calling. So I definitely think it just depends on the person and what you want to do. Not everyone wants to become a blogger and not everyone wants to work for corporate America.
Did the money you made blogging tell you you wanted to take that turn, or was it that you were at that point unhappy at work and you knew you wanted to make a change?
So it was a mixture of a lot of things. I started making Sense of Sense back in 2011, and I had no idea that blogs could make money or anything like that. It was all just for myself. It was just a way for me to talk about my personal finance situation and just engage with other people who were living paycheck to paycheck, trying to pay off their debt quickly and stuff like that. And then eventually I started making money with my blog. And I want to say it was about 1 year in and I was making about $1,000 a month. And then a year and a half in, I was making around $5,000 a month. And that's when I realized that I could pay off my student loan debt super quickly. I wouldn't have a ton of debt hanging over my head anymore. And that there was really no reason for me to continue working the day job that I really did not like. And instead, start blogging full time, which is something that I really, really enjoyed.
So how did you have that conversation at work? Did you just go in and say, hey, my blog's taking off, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm out? Or was it more of a complex conversation? Because I know it varies for some folks, and there's been folks who have negotiated exit packages and all of these other things. So what did that look like for you?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't fancy for me. I definitely didn't negotiate anything, even though everyone keeps telling me I should have. But at that time, I was actually anonymous with my website. So like not even my friends knew about it. I actually just kind of, I put in a 2-month notice at my day job and I pretty much just started working for myself and no one really knew what I was doing. I was super secretive about it just because blogging was still so new back then. And I was very personal on making a Sense of Sense, like with just like what was going on in my life, net worth updates, stuff like that. And I just really liked it being, really liked being anonymous back then. I'm now not anonymous, of course, but it was definitely a different way for me to blog back then.
Yeah, that was the era of pen names. I think both Marcus and I had our own pen names back in that day. Word to Slim Jackson, and I'm not going to put you on blast in case you want to keep that name in the background, Marcus. So at some point, you start making money. So I, two-part question. So first, what was the first money that you made from blogging? And then the second part is, when did you get to the point where you said, you know what, like this can really be a thing? And that was what put you in the path to walk in and decide that, you know, this day job is no longer for me.
Yeah. So around 6 months after I started making Sense of Sense, I actually had a blogging friend of mine email me, and she asked if I wanted to be connected to an advertiser friend of hers. And that person, I ended up placing a sponsored post on Making Sense of Sense for them. And I ended up making like $100. It wasn't a crazy amount considering I had been working on my blog for 6 months at that time. But like I said, I knew nothing about blogging. So just making that $100 was like super thrilling because I really loved working on Making Sense of Sense. I mean, I was working like 20 to 40 hours a week on it for free just because I was enjoying what I was doing. So being able to make that first $100 was super exciting. And then after that, I started making money through like freelancing. I was staff writing for other personal finance blogs. I was managing their social media accounts and stuff like that. And so that's how I was starting to make my money in the beginning, really. It was just through sponsored advertisements and freelancing for others. And then eventually around when I quit my day job to blog full time, that's when I started to realize that I needed to diversify how I was making money. And that's when I started going after like affiliate marketing, display advertising, bigger and better sponsored partnerships, and then eventually creating my own course and launching my own products.
And I want to give some people some numbers to work with here too, because they might find this either difficult or amazing, or maybe they're ready to quit today. but you walked away from, at least from this Forbes article, $50,000 a year plus bonuses. So was that difficult to leave a $50,000 guaranteed job, you know, the security of a paycheck to paycheck, and go into this $1,000 a month, but really taking a chance? And how did you actualize that plan?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was definitely really scary leaving my day job. And I definitely thought about it every single day back then. If you look at like my old blog post back then from like 2012, early 2013, before I left my day job, a lot of the blog posts were like, am I making a huge mistake? Like, should I take this leap? Stuff like that. And I was definitely afraid to leave the good income, good stable income. I had really good bonuses, good insurance, stuff like that. And it was really scary to leave it, especially since I have 3 college degrees and none of them are in blogging. They're all in business and finance. So leaving my comfortable day job for something that I didn't really know much about was definitely a scary feeling. But now that I'm looking back on it, it was definitely the best decision ever.
And for a lot of people, there's this talk of you need to have 3 months of savings, 6 months of savings. You need to have a year of income stocked away so that you can pay all your bills. So what was, I guess, the thinking for you in terms of, you know, how much you saved to be able to take that leap?
For me, my main goal was to pay off my student loan debt. I can't remember exactly when I paid it off. I think it was like June or July of 2013. And I had the goal in 2012 of paying off my student loans in 6 months. And I had around $38,000 in student loan debt. And my plan was to just side hustle like crazy and put it all towards my debt. I was reading all these articles on other personal finance websites that were like, I paid off $100,000 in 6 months, or I paid off $200,000 in 1 year. And I realized if other people can do it, I can probably do it as well. That's why I made that crazy goal of paying off $40,000 in 6 months. It actually took me 7 months. But definitely not upset with that at all. And that was my goal. Before I left my day job, I wanted to pay off my student loan debt as quickly as I could. Because without the student loan debt, all I had was my mortgage. And it was a super affordable mortgage. I think our mortgage was like $910 a month or something. So I mean, I think my student loan bill was almost the same amount as my mortgage payment. And of course, while I love having my degrees, it's not like something you can physically touch. Whereas with a house, I'm actually enjoying it every day. So being able to pay off my student loan debt was definitely a big goal of mine. And the other thing I also did was I also built up an emergency fund. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was pretty large. It was 6 months to a year, I think, of expenses. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do that so that if I had a bad month blogging, that I wouldn't feel like I'd have to go chase down another job really quickly. Because we all know that if you have like one stressful month, that can just like barrel out of control and affect everything else in life. So, I mean, I definitely did not want that. I wanted to have a comfortable emergency fund to rely on.
Got it. And so what made you choose personal finance? And I think the follow-up to that is there's a lot of people who are thinking about starting a blog on whatever topic they may be interested in. And some folks go into it thinking about monetizing right away and the money they can make from these various niches that are considered hot. So how did you end up on personal finance? And then what advice would you have for someone who's trying to pick a topic to start blogging about?
For me, I actually just stumbled across personal finance. I was reading Cosmo magazine, and in it, they actually featured a women's finance website called Daily Worth. And I started reading Daily Worth, and one day I was just like reading an article. I scrolled down to the comments, and in the comments, I realized it was a bunch of people commenting who were just interested in personal finance, and they all had these small personal finance blogs talking about how they're paying off debt and stuff. No one was monetizing their blogs. They were doing it just for themselves. And I started reading those blogs, and I realized this would be a really great way for me to learn how to manage my own money better. So I started my own personal finance blog. And it was, like I said, it was all just for me. I didn't know anything about blogs. I didn't even have social media accounts for like my blogs for my blog back then. I didn't have an email or anything like that. It was all just for myself. So I do like to, that kind of segues into the next thing, like what should you blog about? And I always tell people, you should be passionate in what you're writing on. And I'm sure there's tons of people out there who don't care at all about what they're writing about, and they see success. But I think for the average person, you should be interested in what you're writing about, especially if you're doing it on the side or if you're trying to build it up and you're really tired. Because if you are passionate in what you're writing about, it makes it so much easier to write on it full time, because blogging is a lot of work. If you're going to be pumping out couple thousand words in articles every single week, I definitely think enjoying what you're talking about makes it that much better.
And I want to give some people some numbers here, because I don't want that person who's like on the fence. They already, hopefully they didn't send off that 2 week notice email already. But you said that I was working 100 hours a week. Side jobs consisted of taking surveys, mystery shopping, staff writing, research, phone calls. I sold credit cards. I don't know if Rich, did you ever do the sell credit cards as far as the side hustle gigs go?
Nah, but I did that telemarketing gig where my job was to collect social security numbers and date of birth so we could run people's credit and then have a loan officer call them, which looking back is probably the worst job that I've ever had and quite shady.
And I just want people to, you know, it's going to take a little bit of work before you can hardly work. So I appreciate you talking about the passion and how that continues to drive you forward, push you forward. So I think people who are going to make that move, we might want to first know what that passionate move is. Just don't quit passionately. You know, what's step two?
Yes.
And I think this is a good time to like, let's start talking about sense of sense, but I want to kind of a slow runway up to it. So before we talk sense of sense, making millions at 27 year old as a blog writer, generating 100,000 in monthly income. This is a teaser alert, folks. You told Farnoosh of So Money Podcast that although you're on a pace to make at this time $1 million, you actually, my main goal for the year, this is a quote from you, is just to be able to take a break from the blog, take a full day off and not feel like I have to answer every single email, every single moment. Something always comes in just to enjoy the day. Now, this was, I think, a few months ago now. I noticed you did take a social media hiatus. So how was hashtag self-care?
Yeah, so I didn't really take a break for social media. Instead, I was trying to be more mindful of my time spent on social media. So, for example, I realized like on Instagram, it tells you in your settings how long you're spending each day on Instagram. And it tells you like for the past week.
I hate that setting, by the way.
I really don't want to say the amount I was spending on Instagram, but I mean, I was addicted. I would upload something every single day, like it was my religion. And now I'm only posting like 3 or 4 times a month, maybe. But before I was publishing every single day, I didn't miss a day for like 2 years, probably. Like it was my religion. I was religious about it. And I was like that on a lot of social media accounts. Like I would just scroll, go crazy. And I'm definitely not perfect. I still waste a ton of time on social media. And that's the main reason for why I realized that I need to change. And definitely, I definitely needed some improvement. It's like I said, I'm still working on it, but it's definitely something that more people need to realize. I think I read a statistic that, so I know this one's true. It's like the average person spends 35 hours a week watching TV. And crazy enough, the average person spends like over 20 hours a week on social media as well. And that's not including people who like actually work on social media for a living. That's like everyone. And when you consider the fact that most people don't use social media for their job, I mean, 20 hours a week, that's a ton of time just spent scrolling through like Facebook feeds.
Yeah, Twitter is my social crack. And I know because, do you have an iPhone, Michelle? I think Rich has Android. Oh, yeah, you switched to team iPhone recently.
I came over to the dark side.
Welcome to the winner's team. But iPhone too. Yeah, iPhone sends you that alert each week. And I don't even know how to, I want to turn it off. It's like, ding, ding, you have spent 48 hours on. So I was like, I don't want to know this. And then it breaks it down by like productivity. And like my productivity bar is like 0.1. And then my non whatever descriptive bar is like 99% of this was wasting your time. And I was like, how do I turn this setting off? I don't like this harassment. So, but I do want to know, did you have FOMO, the fear of missing out? Or what did you learn from that break?
No, not at all. So funny enough that you bring up Twitter. I actually deleted Twitter off my phone, I don't even know, like 4 years ago or something. Smart. And it's been so nice. I also deleted Pinterest off my phone at that same time. And it wasn't because I was trying to take a break from social media. It was because my phone only had so much storage. So I was like, instead of getting a new phone, I was like, I'm just going to start deleting apps. So Twitter and Pinterest didn't make it. But I have it up on my computer, but I don't spend like hardly any time on it. And that's really great. So that's my first tip that I recommend for everyone. Just delete apps off your phone. And that saves so much time.
And I guess I do have a question here. Like Rich said, we both did the anonymous route for a while there. But to talk about something like this that's so personal, how did the internet treat you? Like, was it supportive? Was it? I guess starting out, I feel like now, you know, you've got a present, you've got a brand, but I feel like this is a very personal topic to share with. And we know how the internet can be. So how was that experience for you?
Do you mean going from anonymous to public?
I would say both. When you were writing and you were building an audience, how was the responses? Were people supportive of your journey? Did it continue to move you forward? See, I tend to get motivated by hate. So it doesn't really, like trolls, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm about to show you. And then, you know, I go out and I like, yeah, I got stunt, you know. So, but everybody doesn't operate like that. So did you get some either meaningful comments that pushed you forward and continued to motivate you? Or was there, what was your motivation to keep going while you were building that brand?
So I didn't receive a lot of hate comments when I was anonymous. I definitely get a lot more now that I'm public. I'm not sure why that is. But when I was anonymous, it was a really great community of other anonymous personal finance bloggers. And some of them are still around, which is really funny to think about because I've been blogging since 2011. So it's been almost 8 years. And there's actually some people out there who are still blogging anonymously, talking about paying off debt and stuff like that. And I just think the community is what motivates me. Like I love seeing people or hearing about people who have retired early, people who have paid off their debt. I just really love hearing about those success stories and how people are changing their financial lives around.
And why did you choose to come out from, I always butcher this word. So why were you no longer anonymous? There's another better word, but I can only read it.
I think that's
yeah,
it.
There we go. There we go. Good luck. Yeah, there we go.
It was just a lot of work to be anonymous, honestly. Like I was constantly having to like either cover my face or crop my head out of pictures. Trying to change or to keep my name a secret was hard too. And then actually just one day, one of my husband's friends, my husband worked at a car dealership at the time. And I can't remember how the topic of my blog came up, but one of the salesmen there, he was like, I'm going to find Michelle's blog. I know she has a blog. I'm going to find it. And like the very next day I went in there and he was like, I found it. So after one person found it, I was just like, I might as well just tell everyone about it. I might as well just not be anonymous.
I can relate to that so much with the struggle of remaining anonymous. And the other weird thing was, and I'd be curious if you experienced this too, is in this past blogging life, Marcus and I, we were part of a site that was pretty successful. And so if you did a search for my real name, you got pretty much nothing. But if you did a search for my alias, you got all of these different events and, you know, winning awards and features and publications. So I actually found it kind of frustrating when I would tell people stuff, be like, yeah, I did this, I did that. And they would look me up and they'd be like, I don't see any of that. What's this guy talking about? Versus my alias that had a lot of the, and I'll put this in air quotes, accolades attached to it. And so it became really frustrating having to explain like, oh yeah, and I also have this thing that I do and I promised it is real, but I use a pen name, but I don't want to tell you exactly what it is because I'm still anonymous right now. So did you find yourself struggling with that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of work keeping it a secret. And then also just, I felt like I was hiding something from people. Like if someone would be like, oh, what'd you do all day? And I'd just be like, oh, I did nothing because I couldn't tell them. It's like, I did absolutely nothing. So, I mean, it was just hard keeping it a secret. It just wasn't really worth it. And like I said, I just felt like it was like, I was kind of like lying to people about what I was doing. So that just became more work as well.
Did you do like a grand reveal where you took the mouse head off and everybody's like, Or did you just like suddenly change that? I mean, people will get that.
Yeah.
I started to go into a whole description, but whatever. Or did you just like one day like, hey, I'm Michelle. It is what it is. Here's my blog. Like, what was the reveal?
I honestly can't even remember. I'll have to look that up. That's an interesting question. I don't think it was like a big reveal, though. I think it was just like, I think I had like weekly personal updates back then. And I think I was just like, oh, I'm no longer anonymous. but I mean, before that, I did post a couple of times, like, should I no longer be anonymous or should I be public? And I think like for the most part, everyone was like, just be public. Like it's, they all realized it was a lot of work as well.
Hey folks, we're taking a quick break from this dope conversation to tell you about today's savory sponsor. If you're like me, you know how stressful airports can be, especially when you're in a long line and might don't make it to your flight. In comes Clear, one of my favorite services when I'm traveling. Clear helps me get through security with the tap of my fingers so I can get to that gate faster and with less stress. With Clear, I am the ID. No need for a physical card. All I need are my eyes and fingertips. You can create your account before going to the airport, and one of their friendly ambassadors will help you finish the process when you get there. I've done it, and it's easy. Beyond airports, Clear can help you get into stadiums faster so you can get to your seat and enjoy the event, get a drink, whatever it is you want to do. The list of venues is growing every day, and if you've got a family, up to 3 family members can be added at a discounted rate, and kids under 18 are free when traveling with you. Right now, PNB listeners can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/paychecks and use promo code paychecks. That's clearme.com/paychecks, promo code paychecks for your free 2 months off of Clear. And now back to the show.
Yeah. Like Rich said, I did this great reveal and I guess it wasn't a big deal. I just changed my at name and I don't know what was more disheartening that it, I had been hiding it for so long and that no one seemed to care when I came out. I was like, hey, Marcus is here. And they're like, all right. I'm like, well, all right, guys. So and I had like, I think I was like 5,000 followers at that time. Someone was talking to me about this because you can probably relate to this. I know Rich can as well. It's actually weird to me. Like, I don't see myself as others see me, you know. I guess I don't have that type of self-awareness, but people are like, yeah, man, I've been following you since 2002. And I'm like, what? And they're like, they could tell my story better than me. They're like, yeah, and I remember when you dated such and such, and then y'all broke up. Man, I was sad for you, man. And the dog, man, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm like, what dog are you talking about? They're like, remember Pookie? And I'm like, oh, yeah, man, I forgot about that dog. So it's actually fascinating to kind of go through this journey. And really, and I even feel weird calling them fans, but I don't know what the people who follow me or whatever, for them to be a part of it. It is kind of cool, but also kind of weird, but mostly cool folks. Don't go away. Mostly cool.
That's funny that you bring that up, like people knowing more about you than you do, because I had someone bring something up from like a blog post like 5 years ago. And I think I told them like the exact opposite of what I said back then. And it's because I couldn't remember, but they knew better, like they knew more about me than I did. Yeah. So it was pretty embarrassing.
That happens more for me with the book because one, I wrote it 6 years ago and I don't, and this happens on the show. Like this is going to happen on this show. I'll go back and listen to the show and hear things because Rich will be saying something. I'll be writing or talking. I'll be thinking of the next talking points and I literally will not hear it. And then I'll be laughing. I'll be like, ha, ha, ha. I'll hear a joke for the first time. Like, oh, we so funny. And it's like, I'm not like in the moment like that. And somebody would be like, yeah, on page 34. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what? Please give me some context. What chart is there? Can you give me the book back so I can look up page 34 too? Because I ain't got it like that. So I appreciate you for saying that. And this is a good time to talk about the blog, which probably some of the listeners are hearing. They're like, finally. So you also chart your money story from $0 to $100,000 a month using income reports. Some people will just think the idea of that is insane. Why did you choose to share your income and pros and cons of doing so?
Yeah, so I decided to start publishing income reports back in like 2012. So that was back when I was still anonymous and I wasn't really making a ton of extra money from my blog. It was mainly through like, so I just charted everything in those extra income reports. It was blogging, freelance writing, selling items on eBay, mystery shopping, and stuff like that. And it just kind of naturally evolved from there. But first, I learned about it from other bloggers' income reports. Like other people were saying like, oh, this is how I made $1,000 last month. And this is how I put it towards my debt. And I was super motivated by that. Just seeing people or hearing about people who were paying off their debt quickly, people who were not living paycheck to paycheck anymore because they were making side income. So I used that motivation and I realized if I had my own income reports, I could probably help other people as well because I found them so helpful. If you had an income report back then, I most likely read it because that's just how helpful they were to me.
Can you break down what goes into an income report for people who aren't familiar with that?
Yeah, so my income reports are typically around, they're pretty lengthy. They're usually around like 4,000, 5,000 words. Oof. And so, but they're pretty similar month after month. Like the first section is like my introduction and why I have income reports, because I know it's super confusing for probably 99.9% of the population to even see that. And then usually I go into what I did the previous month, like what I was working on, what my goals were, how I did, what I failed at. The next section is usually my actual income amount. So I will talk about exactly how much I made from my blog, how much I made through affiliate marketing, how much I made through sponsored partnerships, my course, display advertising, and stuff like that. And then the next section is usually like specific to my blogging goals instead of like overall business goals. And then I usually answer a featured question. So like a common or my one of the recent featured questions I did was, is blogging dead in 2019? And I get that every single year. So it's a really funny question to answer because when I started blogging in 2011, I was told blogging was dead in 2011.
Oh, really?
That was eight. Yeah. And people were like, why are you even starting one? It's dead. And So it's really funny to think about because it's definitely not dead. If you're wondering the answer to that, there's definitely room for lots of blogs. Then usually I end it with, like an affiliate marketing or a sponsored partnership update. And I go over like something new that I learned in those sections.
I'm glad it's not dead because the blog is back at paychecksandbalances.com/blog. And we just revived it this year. So that would be really bad to learn that it is in fact dead. I want to give some people some tangible numbers to work from here. So we on the show always talk about overnight successes typically don't happen overnight. Actually, there's usually a 5 to 10 year story behind it. And your story is in 2012, in May, you made $672, which is 6 times the $100 amount. So that's actually a pretty good accomplishment. 2013 in January, that goes to 6,000. And then in October, you left your job and made 11,000 in income. So how did you, I guess that's a good place to stop. I'm going to go all the way up to 2018, but you doubled your income there from month to month. What happened?
So in 2012, that's around the time when I realized that I could even make side hustle income. So that was like I said a second ago, that was a mix of selling items on eBay, mystery shopping, taking surveys, working on the blog, freelance writing, stuff like that. So once I realized I could make side income, I realized that I could increase the amount that I was earning. I was seeing other people's income reports where they were saying I made $1,000 last month. And I remember specifically there was one income report that I read where she said, I made $20,000 last month. And at that time, I thought that was super crazy. I was like, she's either lying or she's crazy or that will just never be me. And I definitely thought number three, that will never be me. But I still was reading her income reports month after month and they continued to grow. And that's what gave me the motivation to figure out how I could grow my own side income. And that was around the time when I decided I wanted to pay off my student loans as quickly as I could. So I started increasing my hours, increasing my workload. And it was actually pretty easy to increase my income once I realized this is how I'm wasting my time every week. And I can actually be putting that time towards making more money instead.
Is a lot of it automated now or does it still take a lot of work?
A lot of it is automated. And I do have some help. Like I have an editor who goes through all the content that I write and makes it look and sound better. And then I also have a virtual assistant who helps me with like scheduling on social media, but I still do 100% of the writing myself just because I love blogging and I love that part of blogging. I love talking about personal finance. So most of it is still me. My team is very small and they're all part-time, but most of it is automated as well, just because over the years things get easier and there's so many new schedulers out there that make things a lot easier too.
And just so people are familiar, I know we've mentioned affiliate marketing, but for those who are unfamiliar, because I know we've said it a couple of times now, what exactly is that?
Yeah. So affiliate marketing, I mean, it depends on what exactly you're doing. So for me, I'm a blogger. Affiliate marketing for a blogger tends to be when I talk about something on my blog. So if I want to talk about, I just bought the SodaStream like 2 days ago. So if I wanted to promote the SodaStream, I would probably include a link or maybe a review on the SodaStream. And then if a reader purchases the SodaStream through me, I will earn a commission. So I don't know what the commission on a SodaStream would be. I don't even know if they have an affiliate program, but I'm sure they do. So that's how I would earn money. So I promote all kinds of things in the personal finance world, and that's how I earn affiliate income. Some of the things that I promote could be like a bank savings account, a credit card that has a great like travel bonus, cell phone apps that help you save money, personal capital, stuff like that. There's affiliate marketing programs for pretty much everything out there. And to dumb it down even more, I like to think of like Target. They sell all these items in their store, and it's kind of like they're marketers for all those products. They're earning a commission on each product that they sell. I don't know what the commission or how much they're earning off each product, but I like to think about it like that. I'm just a store selling other people's products.
And do you find these products or do they find you?
Both ways. So either I will promote something that I personally have used that I really, really love. Like right now, I really love my SodaStream. I'll probably write something on it just because it could save someone so much money on just all the soda that they're drinking. And it also can cut down on waste and stuff. So I could definitely talk about that really easily on Making Sense of Sense. So, I mean, that's how I find a lot of products. Like it's just things that I use. But also a lot of companies will email me and they'll ask me to review like their cell phone bank app or something. And that's how I find a lot of those as well.
I almost, and maybe some people did hear, depending on the sensitivity of their headphones, bust out loud.
I heard it.
This whole time I thought SodaStream was a like streaming content service. I'm like, I haven't heard of that one. That must be like Spotify. And I was completely wrong. So I appreciate you for that clarification. Rich, did you have a question here?
I did not, but I heard you start to chuckle in the background and I was like, what's funny? But now I understand.
And so we're going to bring them up to, let's say, 2015. So in 2014, just to catch the people up, in 2013, you made $11,000. 2014, you're at $12,000 in January. And then you passed that $20,000 number. In February of 2015, you made $23,000. And then it gets real. $300,000 online in 2015. What happened?
So in 2015, that's actually when I decided that I would stop freelance writing and stop working for other people online. While I loved that it allowed me to leave my day job that I didn't like in order to blog full time, I realized that I still didn't like working for other people. And like I said earlier, like it can be a great thing for lots of people, but I realized my heart wasn't in freelance writing or managing social media for other people. So that's when I actually fired all of my clients. I think I did it in early 2015. I fired all of my clients and I actually decided to start working on Making Sense of Sense full time. And I stopped with all of the distractions outside of Making Sense of Sense. And that's what helped me to focus on my blog entirely. And I was able to grow my income from there because I was spending 100% of my time growing my own blog instead of everyone else's.
I mean, and maybe I'm the only one, but that sounds too simple. So you just spent more time and the money grew. This is like the revelation I had when I studied for tests and studied getting good grades. So maybe it really is that simple, but is it?
I mean, for me, I just wasn't focused. Like for me, I just am not a good multitasker. So when I was working on other people's blogs, I mean, I was spending more time on their blogs and there were just so many of them than I was on my own. I wasn't really learning anything with Making Sense of Sense. I was just kind of chugging along, publishing new blog posts, and I wasn't really doing anything big. And when I was able to just take all that time back and start putting like 40 to 100 hours a week into my own blog, I was able to grow my affiliate income, grow my sponsored partnership income. I was able to grow all the partnerships I had with all these companies. And then that's also around the time when I decided to, since I had all this extra time, to start creating my own course, which is Making Sense of Affiliate Marketing. And that's definitely what helped me to grow my income even more, the fact that I diversified.
And on episode 114, we had a maximizing productivity specialist. I'll get that in the show notes. Shout out to Amber De La Garza. But she talked about, you know, working with clients. Did you just do this yourself? Because some people are going to find that amazing. Like, how did you just go from not being productive to being productive?
So I'm not like a super analytical person. I pretty much just fired all of my clients and I gave them like a 1 to 2 month notice and just stopped working for them and just switched everything to my own business. And I think I took some courses back then and stuff. And I pretty much every free blogging webinar that I found, I took so that I could apply everything to Making Sense of Sense and just continue to grow it and find new ways to make income with it.
And I want to give the people an update. It worked. So you, in 2015, 300,000. In 2016, I'm going to bring this up to present day, folks, 979,000. In 2017, 1.5 million. And oh, in 2018, you went over 1.5 million. I'm losing my voice. Rich, you might
jump. Man, you sounding like the old man in the corner who's recounting a story from his youth.
And I kind of think we should leave this in because it is my own fault. So for the people, I think we should leave that in because I had a cigar yesterday and I had no business doing that. And I am suffering through this podcast for the illustrious smooth sounds of Paychecks and Balances. So I sacrifice for the people. So I guess my question from that would then be, I guess it's two part because I saw an update that you did recently where you said you wanted to make the income reports just more helpful. So you're just going to break it down in percentages and cover like facts and lesson learned and things that you want people to have as a takeaway. So now that you are, I don't know if you would consider yourself, but I'm going to use this term, in the millionaire status. What are your takeaways? Like, what is your perspective? How have things changed for you either financially or even maybe mentally and spiritually from making 672 in 2012? To 1.5 in 2018?
That's such a tough question. So many things have changed, but I still feel like I'm still the very same person at the same time. But I definitely have a lot less money stress. There's pretty much almost no money stress now. Back then in 2012, we were living paycheck to paycheck, had student loan debt. Even though I had a good day job, I had so much debt. I had a car loan back then, student loans, the mortgage, monthly bills. I was working and life was just definitely way different back then. I wasn't enjoying my job. And then fast forward to today, we actually sold our house in 2015. We've been traveling full time ever since. We have enough money saved to retire whenever we want. I enjoy blogging. I enjoy making sense of sense. So just like everything is way different. And it's crazy to think about how life was just 7 to 8 years ago. And I thought life was good back then. I mean, I was in my early 20s and life was good. But when I think back about it, I made so many money mistakes that definitely could have held me back if I didn't find the personal finance community.
Has anything changed in terms of the way people treat you? Because to you, you know, you're saying I remain the same. And I think for a lot of us, as we increase in success, we like to think that we remain the same or we do remain the same. I don't think everyone suddenly becomes a jerk. I was going to use another word. I was going to use another word that begins with an A. So do people still treat you the same? Or did you notice that people started approaching you a little differently? Maybe people started asking for money because they think that you got it or they started making assumptions. Did you face any of that as you increased in success with the blog?
So I would say that 90% of people still treat me the same. And I almost never talk about money or the blog or anything like that with anyone that I know. So it's actually kind of funny, like they might all talk about their jobs, but I just really don't say anything. But they still come to me and ask me for like money questions and help along with that. Like someone might have a question about like early retirement or 401ks or something like that. But I mean, no one talks about like, oh, Michelle, I saw in your income report that you made $1 million last year. No, that never comes up.
They're thinking it.
But that would be, I don't know. Yeah, they might be thinking it, but no, everyone still treats me like very similar. I almost every single time I see someone that I have known in the past or whatever, now that we travel full time, we don't see everyone like a ton. But whenever I do go back home, everyone always says like, you guys are the exact same. Like, that's kind of weird. So, I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I like still being the same person, of course. But I mean, there's definitely still some people who have tried to take advantage of the fact that I have income reports. And that's been tough, but that's very few people. So I would say like 90% of people or even 99% of people don't really care about the income reports. And it's been a very select few who have changed because of it.
You said something actually a little bit earlier here, which I found fascinating because it kind of goes in conflict to the advice that you hear all the time. So as you went from dollionaire to millionaire, you actually said that you lost money problems. So it wasn't more money, more problems. And what is your thoughts on more money, more problems versus broke people problems?
I definitely think it has a lot to do with your mindset. So for me, our monthly bills are the same or sometimes even lower than when it was when I was making $50,000 a year, which is really crazy to think about because a lot of people think, oh, well, if you make more money, you're going to spend more money. And just the other day, I actually received a comment on a YouTube video that I took part in. And in the YouTube video, I was wearing like this shirt that I bought for like $15, these pair of pants that I've had since like 2011. And someone commented on it and they were like, there's no way she's making $1 million a year or $1.5 million a year, because if she was, then she wouldn't be wearing Forever 21 clothes. That's exactly what that person said. And I was just like, why does the amount of money that you spend have to do anything with what you're wearing? Like, my outfit wasn't bad. They just assumed, oh, well, she's wearing Forever 21 clothes. And I probably was. But I mean, I don't think that just because you make more money, it means that you have to spend it all. And I think the mindset is where a lot of people get lost as they make more money. They feel like they have to spend more of it in order to either look successful or just because they feel like they have to spend more. For me, we're actually spending the same or even less than what we were before. And I think more people should realize that you don't have to keep up with the Joneses. You don't have to have that lifestyle inflation and stuff like that. Because I mean, it just hurts your savings rate. One stat that I always like to bring up is I did a blog post a few years ago that talked about, it was an article I found that talked about the average person who makes like $50,000 a month, which I don't know how many average people there are that make that amount of money, but it said in there, the average person who makes $50,000 a month only saves 4% of their income each year. And that is a crazy small amount of money if you're making $50,000 a month. There is no reason to only be saving 4%.
And so that's $50,000 a year. $50,000 a month is probably where you were a few years ago, or maybe where you are now.
Well, no, it was, they were saying the average person who makes $50,000 a month was only saving 4% of that.
Oh,
what? Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of money to only be saving 4%.
That's,
I don't know what they're spending their
money
on.
That will be in the show notes, folks. I'm Googling right now.
I'm glad I clarified that. And I had a quick question. Do you have an affiliate on those jeans? Because you said you had them since 2012. I got a pair of jeans that I had a year, thighs starting to bust out the seams, but I haven't put on that much weight. I'm tight about it. So I'm sure there are other people who are struggling with that. So do you got an affiliate on those?
Well, it helps when you don't really wear jeans very often.
Well, there's that.
And I guess we're getting towards a wrap here. Another fun episode, but you kind of answered it. I would be different. The people know I'm different. So like when I come up, and I'm trying to, like, I plan to forget where I came from. Everybody didn't know my name. Like, I'm stepping on their shoulders and I'm rising up and they gonna be like, hey, remember me? I'd be like, no. But do you consider yourself like, did you start from the bottom or did you start from the middle? Did you go full Drake? Like, and you say when you go back home, is it a big city, small city? Because I think for some people, like, that's probably a world they can't imagine. I mean, I've talked to people about this in a smaller environment. I think we talked to Rianca about this, and I'll get that episode back in the show notes. But I'm not by any means making, I'm doing okay. And I'm actually going to write a post this week. You'll check it out on the blog. And I believe it's currently titled, I made over $1 million and I'm still broke. Because I went back and looked at how much I grossed since age 22. And yeah, it's over $1 million, which, but for context, is not a particularly good feat. I'm actually right at average. The average person will make $2.7 million. I just did the research why I know this in their lifetime. So I just happen to be old and got a good job. I'm just a middle-aged male in America. That's pretty much the only thing that I accomplished. But kind of where do you see yourself in all this? And then you talked about savings rate and investing. Like, where are you going to put the money? Are you now FIRE? Do you already consider yourself FIRE? Financial independence, retire early? Or do you just want to ball out, which it sounds like you know, which is what I would do, buy several Maseratis and things like that, go old country road on them, old town road. And so what is your vision for this money, you and yourself in the future?
Yeah, so I definitely wouldn't say I started at the top or even the middle. I had a very, I don't know if you'd say normal. My dad was very, very frugal. We always lived in cheap apartments, and that was because he hated yard work and maintenance and stuff like that.
I understand.
So we would live in like these super cheap apartments that were like $500, $400 a month or whatever. And my parents were divorced. So when I lived with my dad in the summers, it was in St. Charles, Missouri, which is a very small suburb outside of St. Louis. And definitely it's like a middle-class suburb. And then when I lived with my mom, which is 9 months out of the year, we actually grew up in a very low income neighborhood in Chicago. I usually get either some judgment or something like that, which is a negative judgment, which is actually pretty interesting. So, I mean, I would definitely say I started from the bottom and I definitely have improved my life over the years.
And for the people who want to repeat the journey, you've got a couple great courses out there for both blogger beginners and making money online. Can you plug those for our listening audience?
Yeah, so I have Making Sense of Affiliate Marketing, which is my affiliate marketing for bloggers course. It teaches you all about affiliate marketing, how I've earned over $500,000 from a single blog post, the legalities of affiliate marketing and stuff like that. And then I also have Making Sense of Sponsored Posts, which is just like my affiliate marketing course, but it's just for sponsored partnerships. Think like sponsored posts, partnerships with brands and companies. And it goes over everything you need to know when it comes to approaching brands and working with them and negotiating better rates.
And last but not least, where can the people find you on the socials that don't include Twitter and Pinterest?
Yeah, so my favorite is definitely Instagram, even though I'm not really active on it anymore. But it's still something I'm still on like once a week, uploading something new. You can find me at Instagram.com/Michelle Schroe, which is just my first and last name. And you can find that in the top right-hand corner, Making Sense of Sense. That's linked to you right there. And then you can also find me on MakingSenseOfSense.com as well, of course.
And thank you, Michelle, for coming on the show. I think people got a lot out of this. I look forward to making everyone who listens a millionaire.
It's been a lot of fun, definitely.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I'm ready to get this guapito.
Yeah, man. The whole making money online thing, I know it's something that we've been talking about for years. It's part of the era that we grew up in, given that we started with a blog. So cool to hear that story and to know that blogging is not dead. It's still very much a thing.
Yeah, it's good to see somebody who, I guess, made it, if you will. And then also, if y'all missed those nuggets, you can look at the show notes. We'll have her courses that she's got that can roll out so y'all can make those 6 figures to 7 figures too in that scalable business. So that'll be in the show notes. 2 of her courses as well as how to start a blog, step 1.
Yes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. And be sure to subscribe as well, so you're getting new episodes every week as soon as they're released. And this week's review comes from Hitopo. Is that what we decided?
That's what we're going with.
Cool.
Love this podcast. 5 stars. Love the podcast. It's funny and entertaining. I want to thank you for what you do. I'm a white male in the Houston area. Shout out to H-Town TX in the building. Your podcast has opened my eyes to how different money issues can be for people of color. Thank you for putting this content out there. You are welcome. And we actually appreciate that one. Well, that was the wrong way to open that. We appreciate all reviews. But I thought that was very insightful. So I'm glad that we're reaching out to the people and having an impact. 5 stars.
Definitely appreciate those 5 stars. And if you don't know how to leave a review, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. And we've got everything for you right there. So you can hit us up on the Apple Podcasts, subscribe. And again, make sure you subscribe from whatever podcatcher you're listening to.
And if you want to find us on the other social medias, we're on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can follow our individual accounts. Find me at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter because I ran out of characters. 2 T's everywhere else on earth because that's my government name. Do not Google me because there's a bunch of other more popular and ones. Scandalous Marcus Garrett. Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And as we mentioned up top, our course goes live this financial literacy month. Don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybell.co/email. You'll also receive our free weekly money plan, weekly newsletter, and learn when it's live.
And shout out to our PNB patrons who will be getting access to the course for free as part of being PNB premium members. To learn more about becoming a patron and supporting the show, visit paybell.co/Patreon. Thanks again to everyone for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.